This is Jenny.
And this is Amanda.
And we're from Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda.
Every second and fourth Tuesday of the month here on WGXC Acre Hudson Catskill 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And you know tomorrow is your last day to vote in the special congressional election and in a myriad of Democratic primary elections around the region. Get out there and vote tomorrow if you haven't voted yet. Otherwise, on the WGXC Morning today, we'll hear from Ronnie Mintor, a formerly incarcerated individual who lives in Albany now as the co-founder of the Freedom Unshackled Coalition. And he'll tell us about New York rules that are no longer letting people send prisoners care packages from home. They have to buy items sent to prisoners from certain vendors now, and they're much more expensive. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through.
American jazz legend Joe Morris is coming to Opus 40 Sunday, August 28th, performing there in Saugerties from 3 to 5 p.m. with Brandon Lopez also on the bill. Joe Morris is a renowned American jazz guitarist based in New York City. This is a rare chance for local audience to see him. Sunday, August 28th at Opus 40 in Saugerties from 3 to 5 p.m. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, where you can add your own events to have them read on the radio by pressing the Add an Event button, WGXC.org in the community calendar.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Sun Common, supporting vibrant communities across New York for over 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that under legislation signed into law by Governor Kathy Hochul last week, a requirement to complete first aid knowledge and skills training will be waived for those with a disability who want to coach high school sports. This will allow more people to become coaches, according to State Senator Rachel May. Quote, "This is an exciting day for New Yorkers who would like to coach high school sports but can't physically perform CPR and other first aid," unquote, May said. Quote, "Of course, the safety of players is paramount. This legislation maintains high safety standards and allows people with disabilities to coach high school sports," unquote. The measure still requires schools to have another coach or staff present at a sporting event who is CPR trained certified. The law was supported by people with physical disabilities who have tried to coach high school sports. May's office pointed to Josh Virgil as an example. Virgil was injured in a car crash and cannot physically perform CPR. He said, quote, "This opens the door for so many of us to be able to do what we love. It also shows that anything is possible as long as you believe and do not take anything for granted," unquote. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
Melissa Mano reports for the Times Union how a lack of rain this summer has stunted this year's crops of vegetables. Scott Seeberger of Windy Hill Orchard in Rensselaer County said, and I quote, "Our biggest struggle right now is fruit size. Being an older farm, we didn't have the irrigation system that we would have liked, and we're probably two sizes down on fruit," end quote. The U.S. Drought Monitor reports that most of the local area is in a moderate drought. Last month, for instance, was Albany County's sixth driest July on record, with 1.82 inches of rain below normal, according to the Federal Integrated Drought Information System. Jim Zub, who owns West Wing Ag in Rensselaer and Washington counties, said, and I quote, "It's disheartening because you know that the crop is so damaged that it's not going to recover," end quote. He went on to say, and I quote, "We haven't seen a drought like this since the first year we bought this farm in 1983. And this is significantly worse because of the timing," end quote. He expects to get 30 bushels an acre of corn this year, rather than the normal yield of about 170 to 175 bushels per acre. "The timing is worse because costs for fertilizer and fuel are nearly double because of global inflation and Russia's invasion of Ukraine." Tessie Gifford on her farm in Gainesport said, and I quote, "The peppers are shriveling up on the plants. The beans feel hollow. Just this week when I pick eggplant, it mushes. It's spongy in my hand," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News reports that New York State Attorney General Letitia James wants all police departments and special units to wear cameras. James is recommending that every police agency in the state deploy body-worn cameras based on the findings of an investigation into a police-involved shooting in Rochester in June of 2021. In that incident, a murder suspect fired a gun at one officer and aimed at a second, with the second officer fatally shooting the suspect. At the time, the Rochester Police Department did not equip its SWAT team officers with body-worn cameras, even though other officers in the department were required to wear them. The report found that, quote, "The body-worn cameras are critical to transparency, accountability, and safety," unquote. James said the Office of the Special Investigator recommends that the department equip SWAT teams with the cameras unless a command decision grants an exemption based on the facts of a particular case. Quote, "It's imperative that every law enforcement agency in New York is equipped with body-worn cameras, and we urge the Rochester Police Department to outfit every officer, including members of special teams, with this critical tool," unquote, James wrote. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Andrea Meckel reports in Porcupine Soup that Cairo Town Supervisor Jason Watts and Councilperson Tim Powers are bickering in public again. At the town's August 17th meeting, at the end of the meeting, Powers said, and I quote, "At the August 1st meeting, an executive session was called that was not on the agenda, and the reason being was for discussion of the recent lawsuit that was filed against the town of Cairo," end quote. Powers started to say before Watts cut him off, and I quote, "Upon heading toward the private meeting room," end quote, Watts told Powers, and I quote, "Can't have this discussion. I'm going to put you on notice right now. You cannot have this discussion," end quote. Powers pressed back, and I quote, "No, I can have the discussion that you and Councilwoman Deborah Bogans banned me," end quote. Watts interrupted, saying, "We didn't ban you," end quote. Then Powers said, and I quote, "You tried to ban me from going into executive session," end quote. Watts responded, no, I didn't," end quote. Then Powers said, and I quote, "You tried to call a vote, and you both voted to kick me out," end quote. At one point, Watts said, and I quote, "This is my board," end quote. And Powers corrected him, saying, and I quote, "This is the people's board," end quote. Attorney Monica Kenny Kapp is suing the town of Cairo and Watts and town council members Deborah Bogans, Michael Flattery, and Mary Jo Cords on behalf of Cairo residents Emmy Cross and Mountain View Enterprises, LLC, a company owned by Krepp's husband, Chris Krepp. They say the town acted, and I quote, illegally, voting to split up more than $60,000 in HUD, U.S. Housing, Urban and Development Residential Rehabilitation Grant Funds, among three applicants. Powers was absent the night of that vote, so is not being sued. Watts and Powers frequently bicker with each other at town meetings. Read the full story in Porcupine Soup.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that the work that has closed Hudson's Promenade Hill Park for the past 15 months is coming to a close, Department of Public Works Superintendent Rob Perry said. Construction on the $1.8 million rehab project began in May 2021, but was delayed because of the pandemic and subsequent supply chain issues. Perry said the city is now receiving the railings needed to outfit the park's staircases and ramps, marking the final step of the project, which was originally projected to be completed in late January 2022. Perry told the council, quote, "There's a significant quantity of railings needed on both sides of ramps and the steps. We are starting to see them trickle in. We have no idea when we'll have a completion date to open, but that's really the last of our punch list items," unquote. The $1.8 million project was funded with the $1.1 million from the State Downtown Revitalization Initiative grant, along with contributions from H. Van Emmergen Foundation and the Colarusso family. Perry said a timetable to complete the project is dependent on when the remainder of the railings arrives. Quote, "You can't open a park without railings," unquote, he said. Quote, "You can't have stairs without railings, and you can't have handicapped accessible ramps without railings," unquote. The renovation of Promenade Park, which includes a redesigned lower plaza as well as upgrades to the playground area, will be a boost to the city, Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson said. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Ted Remsnyder reports for Columbia Green Media that Heather Bagshaw has quit her job as Green County Tourism Director. On August 6th, she started a new job as the Vice President of Marketing with Destination Niagara USA. She said, and I quote, "Number one, it was just about a personal change. Ultimately, it was about career advancement. This opportunity affords me growth in my career, working with a great destination and team and working under President and CEO of Destination Niagara USA, John Percy, who is well known in the industry. It was a great career move for me, and that's basically the main reason. I did enjoy my time with Green County. I loved the people, but it was just time," end quote. Bagshaw became Green Tourism Director in February 2013 and was a Catskill Village Trustee from 2015 to 2018. Green County Administrator Sean Groden sung her praises. Groden said, and I quote, "She worked tirelessly. She automated a lot of things and brought technology to bear in the industry. We had the formation of the Tourism Advisory Committee under her, as well as the Business Advisory Committee under her. So she was very active, and she was very involved in the community," end quote. Groden said the county is looking for a replacement. And you can read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
And August 23rd is the final day of voting for the 19th Congressional Special Election and a Congressional Primary Election for Democrats. Democrat Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan and Republican Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro are on the special election ballot to finish out the final weeks of Antonio Delgado's term in office. Democrats Jamie Chaney and Josh Riley are competing for the nomination to run for the new 19th Congressional District in November. Incumbent Paul Tonko and Radoslav Rahr are in a primary election among Democrats in the current 20th Congressional District. Matt Castelli and Matthew Pattordi are in the Democrats in the 21st Congressional District primary. And Democrats Aisha Mills, Moses Magalusi, and Pat Ryan are on the primary ballot in the new 18th Congressional District. Polls are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. for voting on August 23rd.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.com. WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Report. And we start each Renewable Weather Report looking at the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. And the Gas Buddy website says currently the Citco in South Caro has gas for $4.04 a gallon. The air quality forecast is a 36, about the same as Sunday, but the UV index is much better. It's a 1 on Monday, and that's because the National Weather Service in Albany predicts rain on Monday. There's an 80% chance, possibly a thunderstorm, with a high of 74 and a southeast wind spinning local windmills 5 to 7 miles per hour. Monday night, there's a 60% chance of showers or a thunderstorm, and a low is expected to be around 63. Tuesday, again, scattered showers are possible, 70% chance, possibly a thunderstorm also, with a high of 77. Tuesday night, again, there is a 60% chance of precipitation with a low around 63 forecast. Then Wednesday, it turns sunny for the solar panels with a high of 82 and a low around 60. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. Tune in all sorts of creative community voices on the air on Monday, August 22nd at 90.7 FM. Including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show, we will hear from Ronnie Mintor, a formerly incarcerated individual living now in Albany, who is the co-founder of the Freedom Unshackled Coalition, and is talking about how the New York prisons recently stopped letting people send care packages to family members. You know, you have to buy things, products, through special companies. It's all turned into capitalism. And we will also hear on Monday at 10 a.m. we'll hop on the Afrosonic Taxi and hear from Tayana Azizi, Angelique Kidjo, and Selena Leem, among others. At 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. The favorites he's playing this Monday are Wayne Shorter and Herbie Hancock. Then at noon on the Deep Three show, hear tracks from Sarah Peebles, Teresa Wong, and Charles Lloyd, among others. 2 p.m., the Vital Weekly show tunes in brand new music from around the world, including music this week from Peter Koch, Kim Meyer, and Angelina Yershova. Elliot Sharp is the featured artist at 3 p.m. on the Tracking the Odds show. And then at 7 p.m., it's time for Law and Disorder on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Get a local event mentioned on All Together Now. Go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Turn out for a special performance from Leah Bertucci Sunday, September 18th at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Bertucci is performing on electronics, voice samples, and multi-channel radio using four low-range FM transmitters provided from Wavefarm and used to send audio throughout the performance to radios installed within the labyrinth walls of Opus 40 to create a spatialized sonic gesture. Audience members are urged to circulate among the Opus 40 grounds to hear, to make their own live mix of the performance. Bertucci is working with Ben Vita, Zach Layton, and Victoria Ketty on the project. It's Sunday, September 18th, from 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
This is Mitch McConnell when I'm up in the Catskills to go hunt bear and visit my friends in the Greene County Legislature. I always tune into WGXC. I love that weird show, the Nothing Is Real Radio Hour, but it's not on very often. with a bunch of crazy Yankees up there. Where is that station again? Oh, now, remember, it's at 90.7 FM on the dial in my Lexus. I wish we had something like that in Kentucky. Don't forget to vote, y'all.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, August 22nd. We find ourselves 64% of the way through the year, 31 days left until fall. Local early morning temperatures range from 64 degrees in Windham to 70 in Germantown. Regional average soil temperature is 70 degrees. It looks like rain is on the way today with some organized showers rolling through starting around 8 a.m. and continuing all day. A high of 79 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight, rain chances continue as temperatures fall to 68 degrees. ACs will probably still be on due to the humidity. Tomorrow, a little more rain in the morning, then a high of 81 at 3 p.m. and then heavier storm activity is expected, tapering off after dark. We will see a low of 65 degrees. Wednesday, things dry out and we get a high of 86. Overnight at 63 degrees and a hot, dry Thursday with a high of 90 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium with ragweed and nettles adding to the mix. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 6:53 a.m., high tide at 12:32 p.m., and low tide once again at 6:45 p.m. Today's tide strength will be low, and today's river temperature will be 80 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:34 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:07 a.m. Looking way up, we see minor chances of magnetic interference as leftover CME bits drift on by today. Solar wind speed is currently 579 kilometers per second at 6.8 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 60 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 4, unsettled. The current sunspot number is 56. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Mary Jo Downing of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Find out where the music takes you on the next Deep Threes when Federico Durand cuts analog tape the old-fashioned way. Teresa Wong plays her cello through a scary, scary night. And Alvin Lucier misdirects us to the beat of a non-existent drummer. Deep Threes, music beyond boundaries for a digital world.
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Yo! Hold up! Time out! Time out! Y'all take a chill! You need to cool that shit out! And that's the double truth, Ruth!
Thank you. Matthew Shipp on piano, Michael Bizio on bass, and Newman Taylor Baker on drums. This is the Matthew Shipp Trio from their 2022 album World Construct. This is Beyond Understanding.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We have no chance at winning elections if we are in a position where our party has abandoned principle and abandoned value and abandoned fundamental fidelity to the Constitution in order to embrace a cult of personality.
Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney says a new political action committee will help elect Republicans who oppose former President Donald Trump and his lies about the 2020 election. But others in the party, like Kentucky Representative Andy Barr, argue Cheney's primary defeat is evidence voters are more concerned about the economy than the former president.
Real wages are down. Credit card debt is up because people cannot afford this increased cost of living.
A federal appeals court says for now, Republican South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham doesn't have to testify about Trump trying to overturn the 2020 presidential election results in Georgia. Meanwhile, a new NBC News poll finds nearly 60% of voters want investigations into Trump's election interference to continue. Among Republicans, the number is about 20%, compared with over 90% of Democrats and 60% of independents. In a Sunday phone call, President Biden discussed risk to a Ukrainian nuclear power plant with European leaders. The daughter of far-right Russian nationalist writer Alexander Dugin was killed Saturday when the car she was driving exploded near Moscow. Russian authorities called it a terrorist attack. Her father was the likely target of the bomb set in the car he owned. Education Secretary Miguel Cardone on Sunday said the Biden administration will make an announcement soon on extending a hold on student loan repayments.
We know August 31st is a date that many people are waiting to hear something from. We've been talking daily about this, and I can tell you that American people will hear within the next week or so.
Possible presidential contender Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is campaigning for Republican candidates in other states, as well as his own reelection.
We're out there making things happen, and obviously the state has responded very positively, and we've done really well under my tenure.
While talking up Ohio Senate candidate J.D. Vance and far-right Pennsylvania governor nominee Doug Mastriano, DeSantis criticized the additional $80 billion in IRS funding in the Inflation Reduction Act. Defenders say that's aimed at wealthy tax cheats and corporations. But Aaron Wythe of the Freedom Foundation argues it will hurt average income folks.
These 87,000 new agents, they're not going to be going after 100% of the higher income earners. They're going to be going after everyday Americans as well.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Over the last 18 months, Arizona GOP legislators passed 2 restrictive voting bills, one targeted at Native Americans, requiring proof of citizenship to vote by already registered voters. The other is a vague bill tightening vote-by-mail rules. Last week, Arizona hit the trifecta. The state was sued by the U.S. Justice Department, voting rights groups, and the Democratic Party all in one day. The first is SB 1260, allowing a clerk to take someone off the vote-by-mail list if he or she thinks the voter has moved to another county, but it creates no mandate to follow up. It also prohibits the forwarding of a mail ballot. Sending a ballot to an Arizona-registered son or daughter at college could be a felony. Advocacy group Voto Latino also cites voters with unstable housing and retirees who may spend part of the year in other states. Voto Latino and other groups are attempting to get the law struck down because of its vague provisions and burdensome barriers to voting. Arizona's HB 2492 targets a federal election-only ballot, which is an option in Arizona. Many Native Americans who voted for years using the ballot would not be able to because they don't have the citizenship documents. Two suits, one by the U.S. Justice Department and another by Democratic groups, argue that HB 2492 puts an undue burden on the right to vote, violating the First and Fourteenth Amendments. See links to articles and groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
You're tuned into the radio, WGXC, and this is 2022 New Music, collaboration between Stereolab and Nurse with Wound. It's called Simple Headphone Mind on the radio at WGXC.org.
Simple headphone.
22 new music from Stereo Lab and Nurse with Wound.
Why?
Simple Headphone Mind.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Ronnie Mentor, who is one of the founders of the Freedom of Unshackled Coalition and Sisters Healing Old Wounds, and also been active with Vocal New York and the Capital District Chapter of the Poor People's Campaign, and undoubtedly a couple others. But we've asked Ronnie, she's agreed to come on to talk about the issue that the New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision has recently ruled that inmates in the state prisons cannot get care packages from family members, not only from in the mail, but even from in-person visits. So Ronnie, you know, how do families feel about this new restriction?
Well, I can tell you that when this was first announced as a pilot, I was contacted by quite a number of the women that I'm in contact with who are in Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, and they had a lot of concerns. I can tell you, as a formerly incarcerated individual, this would have definitely been problematic for me and a lot of the people that I knew of, and it's problematic now. There's unconventional means, which are illegal, of ways people gather the 30 pounds that are allowed per month to send to their family members. Some have different families buying different things so they can put together the package to send or bring. Others might, okay, I can get $10 now, I can get $15 now, and they shop according to where the prices are best for them. Because a lot of families are low-income families, and it's hard for them to pay higher prices for some of these packages. And so this is definitely going to be a strain on a lot of families.
Now, what the Department of Corrections is saying, well, we got to do this and to, you know, cut down on contraband coming into the prison. Do you think this is the best way to deal with that issue?
No, because here's the reality. As a formerly incarcerated person who absolutely knows how the contraband really gets into the jails and in the prisons, is by the correctional officers or the correctional staff. It's not coming through the mail room. It's absolutely not coming through the mail room. I drank more whiskey while I was in Groveland Correctional Facility in 1990 through 1994, and it did not come through the package room. I got it directly from the officers. So for them to sit there and say this is to stop the contraband, that this is absolutely not going to stop the contraband. Officers bring that stuff in, and so do the civilian workers.
Now, as you mentioned previously, I assume, you know, people in prison really look forward to, you know, receiving packages from the family members, both for the goods that come, but also just as a way to connect with families. So I imagine the inmates, incarcerated individuals, are not very happy.
Absolutely not, because this is now going to put, like I said, sometimes getting these packages together are family effort, like, all the family members come in together. I can get this, I can get that. Or sometimes they even go to pantries. They even go to pantries to get some of this stuff. Or they, you know, or church members help them collect some of the stuff, the items that go into the packages. They don't just, these most individuals don't just have the money to order. And some people are relying on older family members that might not know how to manipulate certain forms and websites to order these foods. So you're really asking a lot of families to do. This was an unfair thing to do. And I don't understand why. I do understand why the Department of Corrections did not take into account the hardship they're putting on the families and those incarcerated individuals. It's because this is a money business. And obviously these contracts are yielding money, and this is what they do, always.
Well, the cynic in me might also suggest that it's election time. Even the more moderate politicians on the Democratic side have a tendency to want to show a little toughness when it comes to criminal justice reform. But what are the possibilities of getting the governor to agree to overturn this rule?
Slim to none. I believe it's slim to none. I think once things like this are done, the only thing that I can see overturned, that I saw overturned rather, was when they tried to institute the no cigarette ban. I was there in Albion Correctional Facility, I want to say around 2000, when they tried to stop people from smoking inside the facilities. They was going to stop that. It didn't go over well at all. But it did not become like law, so to speak. It was talked about. They were doing these different phases, but it never became, you know, a written regulation or whatever. But that was the only thing that I saw that was talked about and discussed, but never happened. This has happened. They said it was just going to be a pilot. I think Albion Correctional Facility and two other facilities, that's a female facility, and two other facilities were the pilot. And then next thing you know, it just happened.
Now, what are some of the other, I guess, changes that Freedom Unshackled and other groups you're working with would like to see, and you know, how we treat individuals who are incarcerated?
Well, one thing that would help, which is tied into this, is Freedom Unshackled, we are tackling the wages that incarcerated individuals get. I'm actually sitting here right now with the Corrections and Community Supervision wage document that we had to send for, and we're going over it piece by piece, because you want to institute this horrific regulation and force people to order from vendors, yet you're paying the men and women 14 cents up to 27, maybe sometimes 33 cents an hour for various jobs throughout the facility, various programs they call it, throughout the facility. And now saying that they have to now get their stuff from these vendors. And this, across the board, this isn't fair. They need to raise the wages, number one. And that's something Freedom Unshackled is definitely talking to our politicians, our legislators about, raising the wage that men and women who are incarcerated receive. It's unfair that men and women, well, I'm not sure if the women are still doing it, but the men definitely working for DMV. If you call DMV, the first voice you hear is somebody who's incarcerated, the first live voice you hear. But upon release, those same individuals have barriers to becoming employed at the DMV. But they're not getting paid nowhere near what somebody out here is getting paid at the DMV. They're getting a dollar, if that, per hour. Yeah, so where's the fairness in that?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I often remind people that when the Constitution was amended to abolish slavery back after the Civil War, the one group they expressly exempted, unfortunately, were prisoners.
Absolutely. That's definitely still in the 13th Amendment, which brings us to another topic. If anyone's ever heard of Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, this is definitely what's happening in the correctional systems.
I used to work with welfare participants, and I know that the work they did for welfare did not count, say, when they were applying for a county or state job as job experience. Is that also true with people doing work within the prisons, that when they go to apply a job?
Sometimes you can find a unique situation where they will take into account the work that you did while you were incarcerated. I was very lucky that I transitioned into the HIV field, and I was a peer educator for HIV and STDs while I was incarcerated. But at the same token, I had a civilian worker who was more than willing to write reference letters to show the work that I had done for 2-3 years. So it happens sometimes, but far and few between.
Okay. Well, I want to thank Ronnie Minter, along with the Freedom Unshackled Coalition and Sisters Healing Old Wounds, as well as Welcome to New York and the Capital District Chapter of Poor People's Campaign. And this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.